We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. With me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
And joining us again, a man who travels with the Warriors and attends every practice as the Golden State specialist for ESPN and a noted hater of the movie Space Jam, Ethan Sherwood Strauss. What's going on, Ethan?
That's in the title now. How you doing, guys?
Hey, we're doing all right, man. How about yourself?
I'm just sweating into my phone right now with how the weather is. If I just stop talking, it's because I've become electrocuted. A current has run through the water and just fried my brains. But other than that, I'm doing pretty well.
Come to the right place. Not only am I a noted whiner, but I'm a gigantic weather pussy, having grown up in Oakland, California. If it gets above like 75 degrees, I just cannot stand it. So this 90 degree shit, I can't handle, man.
Yeah, well, I'm from San Diego, so I'm pretty much I've got the sensitivity of a man without skin. So I'll try to one up you on that one. I can't go anywhere. I can't move anywhere. I lived in New York for a year. I was walking down the street one day. There was a blizzard. It was 10 degrees, and I had multiple scarves wrapped around my neck, looking like the Mujahideen. And I just thought to myself, you know, I don't have to be here. I don't have to live in these places. It doesn't have to happen. And that was pretty much done.
I hate conceding defeat, but I didn't even know that you could wear more than one scarf. So you have definitely beat me then. I have so many Warrior questions for you, man. We haven't spoken for a while. Let me start this way. Were you there when the Warriors won the title?
I was present. I was present. Now, you can't get in immediately. I think they do have a little moment to themselves when they retreat to the locker room after the whole presentation on stage. But it was a madhouse. It was hilarious. It was funny. You've seen some of the footage that Steve Berman took of drunk Leandro Barbosa yelling various things. Apparently, Mo Spates poured a whole champagne bottle out on my head.
You participated.
I shouldn't say apparently, because I was cognizant of that. Apparently, David Lee also got me. I didn't notice that one because it was just such chaos. But yeah, I gotta say, I try to be fair. I don't want to seem like I am I'm in the pocket of any of these guys or give them preferential treatment. But I thought it was kind of nice that Spades said, "Hey, you've been with us all year. You got to get it," and I got it. So that was kind of a nice moment.
Your next big feature piece is on Mo Spates, I imagine.
Yeah, he's obviously the most important player on the team.
Player in the league.
Best player. all those dunks he missed were intentional, too. He's a satirist. He's a basketball comedian.
I still haven't forgiven him for that.
So it was just a really fun time. You know, it was a lot like going to a wedding where the happiness is contagious, being around people who feel that fulfilled, that in the moment, that present. It's a special thing, and I'm going to remember it for as long as I live, hopefully. And it was nice, and it was funny, and it was chaotic, and great. It was a great time. It might have been better over in Oakland, but it was pretty cool in Cleveland, too.
I mean, of course it was. And let me ask you from a different perspective. We all know you as the ESPN reporter. Your star has started to shine a lot more brightly in the last couple of months. That's true. But I also remember you telling us first time you came on the show, you're an old school Warrior fan. I mean, you've been pulling for this team since they were terrible. Just from that perspective, not as a guy covering the team, but as a person who's watched them ascend from the dust to their current stratosphere, how was that, man? I mean, how cool was it to be in Cleveland and watch them cement a championship?
It's surreal. I don't know how old school I am, too, because I did start with this back in college. So I haven't been long-suffering to the extent that a lot of people have. But it was still unfathomable. Even if I picked it, it was crazy. I did pick the team after. I was really hedging when you think about it, because I said a bunch of pessimistic things the first time I came on your podcast.
Yeah.
So I think I went the other way and then was perfectly hedged. But in general, when you did step back from it, there was just an unfathomable aspect to the idea of the Warriors winning a championship, let alone doing it in such just glorious fashion over the course of the season. The season did acclimate us to it. It
sure
did. It definitely did. But what can happen as it acclimates us to it over the 82 games in the playoffs is that we can forget how out of the blue this was, how people didn't expect this, how people were still arguing over whether firing Mark Jackson was the biggest mistake that this team would make and they would rue the day, and they weren't thought to really have the talent. I'm not even sure if Steph Curry was thought to be a superstar. Maybe he was. So I think the two aspects of it that were so surprising was the one that you're talking about, which is just the idea of the Warriors, the Golden State Warriors winning a championship. But the other one was that they didn't bring in some influx of talent to do it.
Right.
They used it. They did it using ingredients that they'd had the past few years, a collection of people who weren't thought really capable of winning a championship, regardless of the coaching. So both aspects are kind of amazing in retrospect.
Well, and they basically took our advice. I mean, if memory serves, we both said, do not trade Klay Thompson.
You know, yeah,
I mean, we don't want Kevin Love. He's awful. Just stand pat. So, I mean, really, it all kind of came together, you know?
Well, I mean, and I hope you edited those podcasts cleanly and quite well. So those truths that we spoke just shine even brighter.
I had to change the title. I believe the title of our episode was Why They Should Trade Kevin Thompson, or I'm sorry, Thompson for Love. But, you know, that is what it is. That's in the past.
Here's the thing, though. For all we know, if they'd done it, they might have won the championship anyway.
Now,
I'm glad that they didn't, because Klay Thompson had this breakout season, and Kevin Love just wasn't that enjoyable to watch, even though he got better as the year went along. So I'm happy they didn't do it, and that was smart of them. And it's interesting to me that Kerr was against that move, because he talked about in his introductory press conference how he wanted to stretch four. That amped up the speculation that Kevin Love would be that guy. But when you think about it, and I'm not saying this is the reason why Steve Kerr did this or why he sided with Klay Thompson. There's an odd political aspect if you come in and you're the guy who signed off on trading a key person. Then the expectations are also higher, and you really have to come through. Plus, you've disrupted the locker room a bit, and you've essentially fired somebody to Minnesota without even getting to know anybody at first. So that patient approach by Kerr in the end has been validated, and at the time, I thought the organization was making a mistake.
Well, not only do you potentially cause strife within the team, you alienate the superstar in Curry, who came out and wanted to keep Thompson.
Yeah, no, that's...
I'll put it this way. Players say things in the media that's not always what they necessarily believe. But I'll put it that way.
Whoa, put it a different way for me, Ethan. What are you saying there? Did he actually not mean that?
I can't get inside Steph Curry's head. It would be difficult for me to imagine that he would have been livid over the idea of Kevin Love being his teammate, considering Kevin Love's stature at that particular time.
Sure.
That's all I'm saying.
So, I mean, why did he come out then and support Thompson? Just, he was kind of hedging that?
When they're close friends.
Because NBA players do that. Because it's the perfect play. You know, there was a player on the Clippers when Vinny Del Negro was going to be fired, or he was on the cusp of being fired. And I remember hearing through a friend that this particular player was, you probably look it up and find out who it was just saying, oh, I love Vinny, and sticking up for Vinny in the press and being really vocal. And I think one of his teammates said, oh, you're so full of it. You don't care. You probably want him fired. And he said, hey, I can't lose this way. If he gets fired, right, then, hey, there's a new guy. And if he's hired again, or if he comes back, then I'm the guy who was sticking up for him, sure, and I just helped him out, and that's great too. So you really have nothing to lose sticking up for the guy in most circumstances. I'm not saying that Curry was motivated by cynicism, but I'm saying that 99% of the time when NBA players do it, they kind of are.
The second this interview is over, I'm going to Google images of Steph whispering to Ethan Sherwood-Strauss, I hate Klay Thompson. I mean, I don't know if we'll find anything, but it's worth looking.
Well, their relationship is kind of interesting, because I think that they like each other, but I don't think they're friends. And there are a lot of relationships like that in the workplace. Actually, what's interesting about it is that it seems as though their fathers are closer than they are. That you'll see, you'll often see Del Curry and Michael Thompson laughing it up, and they seem to have a connection between those two. But Steph and Klay are just different people. They're different people. I think they get along just fine, but you know, you've had that at work, where you go into work and there's somebody that you like at work, but you're not necessarily friends with that person. I think that happens a lot in the NBA, and for some reason, we want to assume, because everybody's high-fiving and hugging out there, that it's friendship or just complete bitterness, and there's a lot in between.
Sure. Well, as far as disparate personalities, it seems like Steph is you know, remarkably funny and well-liked, and Klay has the personality of the pen that I'm currently holding, so it makes sense that they wouldn't immediately mesh. I tell you what,
I wouldn't say that. I would just say that Klay is a little bit... he's a little bit shy in how he comports himself. And I remember asking him, because even if he scores 35 points, he's trying to slink out of the locker room and not talk to media. And I just said, hey, why don't you like talking to media even after you've had some glorious exploit? And he goes, he looks at the floor, he goes, I'm not good at it. Huh. And it was just so honest. It was so honest. He just feels that he's not good at it, so he doesn't enjoy it. And his father is the opposite. His father is the exact opposite guy. Michael Thompson is looking for a microphone.
He has a radio show, right? I mean, he literally has a radio show.
The man has a radio show.
Right.
And the man will do a radio show for you if you see him in person. So I think that Clay's personality just, he's not as comfortable. I think there's a shyness there that sometimes creates a bit of a barrier between himself and the fans.
Yeah, well, in three of the biggest moments that I've seen him interviewed in, I think after he got that 37-point quarter and then the stuff around the finals, every time that he's asked a question in those moments, he just says, oh, I can't put any words to this, or I don't have the words to describe this. That seems to be his go-to kind of opt-out of any type of answering of question.
It sounds like we should be surprised that his father doesn't pop out from behind and say, well, I have a couple words
I'd like
to say about this. Yeah,
or just give Michael Thompson a Clay Thompson puppet and just let the pass a rule that the AP can use that as verbatim from Thompson. And we can get so many more quotes that way. I'm in favor of this. I endorse this.
You've got my back. And I tell you what, man, enough looking backwards. Let's look forward. I got a bunch of questions about the upcoming season. The Warriors right now are committed to three young starters, Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. If you're Bob Myers, do you make it a priority to keep Harrison Barnes? Because his contract is, coming up in another year, and they're currently negotiating. How would you handle that?
We had this conversation on the podcast that I do. I guess I can use your podcast to plug my podcast.
Please.
True Hoop TV Pod. I think what you would do in this situation is have a number that if Harrison Barnes wants to come back at that number and it's cheap enough, then you go, yeah, let's just sign you right now. Let's do this right now before going into next season. But if he's not going to sign at that number and he wants more money, then you just roll the dice and you see what he might sign for at the end of the season. Because the issue is, if you sign Harrison now, you lose his cap hold. Because he has a low cap hold from being on a rookie scale, and that makes things trickier if you were to acquire, and it's a long shot, say, Kevin Durant. So that's the complexity there. So I think if you're Myers, you might go, okay, so Michael Gilchrist signed for, what was it, $13 million a year?
Yeah, four for 52. Yeah, $13 million a year, 4 years, $52 million.
Yeah, so Harrison's not going to sign for that, and he's not going to sign for south of that. But if you can get him coming back at, say, 14 or 15, and keep in mind that with the cap explosion, $15 million is going to be around average starter salary, then yeah, I would say do that. It's a very nice price. But if Harrison says, no way, I want 17, then I probably say, hey, let's roll the dice on the season. Let's see how well you play. Let's see what our needs are as far as maybe getting a big free agent and play it out from there, because I'm not sure that Harrison's going to have the kind of season where he'll command 17 when it's all said and done at the end of it.
Basically,
at various points, he looked a little tenuous as far as could he conceivably lose his job to Andre. Now, they weren't going to do that. I don't think Kerr wants to do that. But you'd probably say that Andre outplayed him. So I don't think that it's a slam dunk, to use a corny basketball phrase, that he's going to be just great next year. So I think there's risk for him, and there's certainly risk for the Warriors, because if he just goes crazy and explodes next season, that's going to be way more than $17 million. So I'd say if you can get him for 14, 15, bring him back. If not, roll the dice. And I don't exactly have a salary cap sheet on hand, so this is all very ad hoc.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't understand it if you did, so that ad hoc is absolutely perfect. And I also like the concept of make him earn it. You know, if he really thinks he's worth that much, show us next season and see where it goes. He is one of the only people on this roster who Warrior fans seem to argue about. You know, we all agree Steph's amazing. We're all super happy with the defensive protection that Bogut provides. Barnes is one of those people who some people feel like he has this huge ceiling. You know, it has not come close to reaching his potential. Others believe is just a run-of-the-mill three. Where are you on that? How good do you think this guy can be?
Well, I've been frustrated by his game at various points. I don't want to kill him too much, because I didn't expect Klay Thompson to turn into what he turned into last season. So there is potential. He is young. He does work hard. But he always seems to lack a bit of feel, where there's something stilted about his game, a little bit robotic. And I think that he fulfilled a nice role where he'll shoot open corner threes. I thought that he had a lot of fight at points in the playoffs. He did a great job against the bigs of Memphis and played up against larger dudes and acquitted himself quite nicely. But I don't necessarily think that he is going to be a $17 million guy.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that. If I had to guess, if I had to absolutely guess, while acknowledging that he could easily overshoot my expectations because he's still young and he works hard, I'm just not the biggest Harrison Barnes guy. I'm just not. I get a little frustrated with how his defense, he can have lapses. He's good if you give him a job. He's somebody where if you say, hey, stick to that guy, he will do it. But off the ball, he can fall asleep. On switches, there's miscommunication often. So I get a little bit frustrated with that. And I just don't know if he does something they need. They've got a lot of wing defense. They've got wings. They have that. And I'm not sure that they need the kind of shot creation that he wants to do later in his career. So I could potentially see this going to a place where, and this is a possibility, this isn't a prediction, where Barnes wants to be the kind of go-to scoring option that the Warriors don't really want and don't really need. So maybe he'd almost be better served elsewhere. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, what does Barnes add as a locker room guy? I mean, the Warriors are going to be losing David Lee, who was apparently great as far as chemistry stuff was concerned. We all know chemistry is an important part for a team winning. They're spending a ton of time together. Does Harrison Barnes bring any kind of intangibles to this team, as a motivator or just a guy who can pick up others?
I think he's a nice guy, but I'm not sure that he's regarded as a locker room leader. I haven't heard anything like that. He's not Draymond, but he fits in well. He's certainly not a chemistry killer. Now, I do think that insofar as there are a few chemistry issues, and I say this with caution because people can jump to conclusions and think it's the worst thing in the world. But if I'm just picking one spot for this is just one spot where the Warriors are not totally harmonious, singing kumbaya, linked arm in arm, I think it's the amount of opportunity that Harrison has gotten relative to other people on the team, and the sense that because he was drafted so high, because he has those expectations,
sure,
because he's got a good relationship with ownership, that he gets more opportunity and more chances and a starting job despite not really playing into the starting job the season before, that other guys wouldn't get. So
right.
I think there's a little bit of resentment there at times. Now, that can exist while people completely like him and will completely set it aside and not care if he has a fantastic year next season. But I think there's a little bit of that.
It makes perfect sense about that. I think one of the last times you were on the pod, what we were saying is that there's very few people who are given a starting spot to jumpstart their game, which is basically what Harrison got. And just to kind of back us up, for Scott's take, personality, I thought you used a perfect way to describe his game that seemingly describes his personality, robotic. He is so overly professional. Now, I don't get to see him off camera, but he just seems like everything is so calculated and so specific that it would be hard to get to know him. And then finally, answering your question, what do we think? I've always viewed Harrison's upside as the most athletic player on the team. He's our slasher. He's the guy who might have a higher ceiling, but I always get frustrated because it feels like he's never using it. You know, with exceptions during the playoffs, when it becomes Harrison or playoff Barnes, rather, there's long stretches during the regular season where he's not using his jumping ability. He's not using his speed. You know, I mean, you almost forget that he has those gifts. If that's not something that immediately translates, then hell no, I wouldn't pay him $17 million a year. That doesn't make sense. What's he adding?
Well, and again, it's hard because he's young. The other side of it would be, he did show those flashes in the playoffs. He did have these aggressive moments. He had some great playoff moments.
Yeah.
That putback dunk in the Pelicans comeback. I thought he was really good out the gate and that really crucial to turn around the series that was a game four against the Grizzlies.
Yeah, sure.
And he played with an aggressiveness. He spoke of that. He was beating his chest after the series ended, I think, talking about how he didn't want to have any regrets after how the Clippers series went the year before and he just had that in mind motivating him. So I think there are positive signs and there are positive indicators. You could do worse than having somebody like him in your organization for years and years and years. I do think that it's a bit of a moot point, though, because this is the other part of it. You're asking me, hypothetically, how would I handle the Harrison situation? I don't think I'm going to handle it or have the same opinions that the people who are actually making the decision would, yeah. Because I think the organization is very pro-Harrison. I think Lacob loves him. Lacob has said that. Loves Harrison. You have to remember that it's still a bit of a people business, and I think that Harrison's gotten on well with Lacob.
Yep.
I told this story before, but it was funny to me, where I was in the hallway, and I see Harrison. He walks by Joe Lacob. Joe Lacob says hi, and I think maybe his headphones were in. I can't remember, but he doesn't quite notice, and he gets around 20 feet past Joe, and then something registers in his mind, and he whips his head back, and he sees that's Joe Lacob right there, and he sprints back the other direction, full, just 100-meter dash towards Joe Lacob to put the hand on the shoulder and everything else. So he's a very well-liked person,
yeah.
Organizationally, and when you talk to people, they're high on him. They think that he could be that scorer. They wonder if the situation might be holding him back. So
sure.
I think they're probably going to lock him up before the season starts.
Right.
That is my best guess.
I also feel like that one of the main things we've learned is that Harrison should have poured champagne on you in the championship celebration, and then this conversation would have gone entirely different.
Oh, yeah. It'd be like $19 million, 20 maybe.
Every dollar he wants. Say, another guy whose contract is coming up and isn't getting as much attention, I'm kind of surprised by that, is Festus. So let me start this way. Do you think he spends his career in Golden State, or is this guy going to be a salary cap casualty at some point?
I would hope he spends his career in Golden State. I'm really excited about the emergence of Festus, and I do think it's an underrated story. He didn't play the full season, so people missed it, but man, did he progress last year. It was crazy. A lot of it said he was actually coached for the first time in his career. They actually had big men coaches. They actually had Ron Adams working extensively with him and Jaren Collins just doing wonders with his touch and his confidence, really, and he was twice the player when he played that he was as a rookie, and so I'm very much by now in the Festus Ezeli stock. I think based on the conversation that we had with Kerr on the True Hoop podcast, I think just from his statements, and I'd have to go back and I'd have to look at them, he might have indicated that Festus is playing for a big contract this season.
Yeah.
And that would insinuate that he's probably not signing a deal this summer. But things can change. Things can change. So I think that's probably based on that conversation. That was a public conversation, not a private conversation. But based on that, maybe that tilts a little more towards he's probably getting paid at the end of next season.
Well, and you got to imagine he's going to get a pretty good shot at things this year because, I mean, Bogut's minutes, I think, will probably go even farther down than they were already last year. So he's going to get his shot.
I think that's the risk. That's the risk, isn't it? If you get Festus a deal right now, you could get something pretty reasonable. You know, you might be able to get 9 or 10, and again, hey, 15, average starter money. I know 9 or 10 sounds crazy, but I believe that'd be a great deal.
In a heartbeat, I'd do that. Absolutely.
If Bogut gets hurt and Festus, let's say, plays 70 games of starting quality center basketball, looking as athletic as he did at points in that Houston series and in that Cavs series, then you're really regretting not signing him this summer. I mean, because he's gonna fetch some offers that way. And with the cap going up, it's going to be crazy. So I think not signing him now is a bit of a risk. So if I was hypothetically running this organization that they don't run, I would probably flip it. Like, I think that, and this is pure guesswork, I think that the Warriors are more inclined to sign Harrison now and sign Festus later. I would be more inclined to sign Festus now and sign Harrison later.
You know, I agree with that because what Festus brings to the table is far more identifiable. Like, let's say he doesn't progress past what we saw last year. And I think he will. Of course he will. A young player, getting better, hasn't played basketball that long. But even if he's just the big body that he is and only his basketball IQ increases, he can add a lot what Bogut already gives us, right? He's a big body we can funnel people to towards defense. We don't need him offensively. I mean, it seems like his addition to this team outweighs Barnes right now. So I'm completely with you. What's Festus's upside? Can he be a double-double guy? In my wildest fantasies, he's like a Dale Davis type. Am I shortchanging him? I mean, do you think that actually fits?
I like that comparison. I think you need to temper expectations a bit with him, just because he's a little like Harrison in that the game isn't so fluid, right? He's not the most instinctual player, and he's not as good as Bogut is at defense yet. You know, he still jumps when he shouldn't sometimes. He's trying to block everything in the fifth row, but I think he could become a great rim protector just with a little bit more experience. And what's cool about him versus Bogut, they do bring different things. It's funny, they have a similar stature, but they bring different things. Whereas Bogut brings you skill, and he's a great passer on those back cuts that Steph Curry has, just a really good passer. Festus doesn't do that, but he's got that athleticism. And when you combine it with all the wing defense the Warriors have, I just kind of like that look. And it just up and down the court in a way that Bogut really doesn't bring. So right now, I think the ideal situation is just have that nice change of pace between the two. But I could see Festus' ultimate ceiling. I don't think he'll be an all-star necessarily, but an above-average starter isn't out of the question for him.
Let me switch over players and ask almost in a different direction. I want to talk to you about Steph, and here's what I mean by different direction. Unbelievable year. Maybe the best year you could possibly imagine from Steph. He's an MVP, leads his team to a championship, basically becomes the face of the NBA. Can this guy get better, or have we seen his peak?
That's the question. That's the question we ask Kerr. That's a question that I've been asked by Nate Duncan over at Real GM. Can Steph Curry get better? I'm inclined to say yes, because he finds a way to.
Where? Where does he get better? Because, I agree with you, he's such a hard worker. But, like, what areas can he possibly improve on?
Well, probably cutting down on the turnovers, I would imagine. And he got better at that over the course of the season. But maybe a full season of cutting down the turnovers. And there's also the other matter of he could still shift some of those two-point shots he takes to three-point shots. Huh. He could still stand to take more threes, because we haven't really seen the efficiency fall off when he takes them. So then you're getting you're theoretically getting even more efficient on those makes. But you know, he finds ways. He finds ways to get better. I don't think people would have imagined that he would become someone who shot 68% at the rim like he did last season.
Well, I seem to be going back to a bunch of intangibles tonight and taking a little farther away from the X and O's. But I think Curry could stand to improve as a leader, and he's going to have to do so in trying to mount a back-to-back campaign. I've obviously never done it, but from what I've heard from people like Isaiah and Jordan, the quotes that they give, it's extremely difficult. You have guys lining up every night who want to take you down as the champions, even just some regular season games. So I think to lead your team to a back-to-back championship is going to be an area where he could grow.
Why do you say he should improve as a leader? Like, what sticks out in your mind that you think he came up short last year?
I just think that, well, number one, he's facing an entirely new challenge, and he's going to have to get a lot of these guys motivated and keeping them hungry. I think that's difficult to do when you've already won a championship.
Because what I've been seeing, and again, I don't have any access, it's all stuff I'm seeing online, but it seems like people are drawn to him. You see a picture of LeBron laughing hysterically when he's looking at Steph. You see him, like, you hear stories about in the Team USA where people wanted to hang out with him even when he was younger. I mean, he seems to be a natural leader, but I'll defer to you, Ethan. Where are you on this? Was he a good leader? Can he improve in that category?
I don't necessarily think that he's a natural leader in the way that Draymond is a natural leader, but he's definitely someone everybody likes and everybody wants to be around and everybody now wants a piece of, to the point, unfortunately, where someone is trailing his car for 30 miles or whatever it was trying to get an autograph. There's a surreal quality to it now where he's becoming an internationally famous celebrity. So naturally you're going to have more gravitas and people are going to listen more to what you do. But what's odd about him is that he maintains a very normal way of being despite all that. And I haven't seen that shift. And I just don't think it's really in his makeup to scream at people or say that this needs to be done. And I don't really think they need it from him either. Huh. I think they have people to do that, and they have Draymond to do that. And if there needs to be something said, maybe Steph will speak up and say it now that he has this experience and he has this sort of cachet in the league. But I think that there is something to the idea that as a leader, he's not Mr. Leader guy, you know?
Right.
You see people adopting the leader personality around him, where he's having a bad series against Memphis and David Lee and the guys take him out to, the Blue City Cafe or whatever it is out there. And they're sort of, and I think Draymond is in on that too, and they're sort of doing the leader thing. Maybe you'll see more of a shift of him doing that with other guys as opposed to vice versa.
He gave a quote during the summer that fired me up and then now I feel can't possibly be true. Let me run it by you and then let's see what you think. This was to Jimmy Spencer, I think, when he was in that Tahoe Golf Classic. Quote, "As I'm thinking right now, free agency isn't really appealing to me because I love where I'm at, love the organization I'm playing for, and the Bay Area is home for me and my family." Is that true? I mean, this guy's going to be eligible for a gigantic contract in 2017. I mean, one that would double the worth of most countries. Do you think he's being genuine when he says he doesn't even want to test the market?
Well, see, that's what I'm here for. He secretly meant right there, I want to trade Klay Thompson for Kevin Love.
Well,
that's
obviously
what he secretly meant.
That's what he secretly meant. And he meant so, I really dislike Klay Thompson, which is weird. A weird way to say it, you know? Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, I think that he wants to. I think he wants to come back because the financial incentives are such that why not? The only threat on the horizon for the Warriors is that Del Curry works for the Hornets, and I think Steph Curry's shoes look best in that Hornets colorway. That's the main threat, as far as I see it, because they've built a really good organization around him. At the same time, things can shift dramatically in 2 years, but they've set it up well. He knows that, and he likes his current situation, and I don't think that he's putting on any airs when he says as much.
Let me give you another quote, this time from a different player and far more concerning. Andrew Bogut right now is playing for the Australian national team. He just led them to Olympic berth, I think, in 2016. They asked him about back pain he was having after he beat New Zealand, and he said this, quote, "I was battling a few little things, but if you take enough pills and things, you end up getting there. It worked out all right. I felt pretty good out there. Tomorrow morning won't be as good, but we got the job done and we're going to the Olympics." As a fan, I took this pretty hard, man. You know, this guy's main concern is injuries. If he's already worried about shitburgery, nagging injuries
and you don't want to be a cultural chauvinist, but you kind of want to say, hey, you know, come on, it's Australia. It's not that important.
Well, exactly.
Basketball. I'm going to go full cultural chauvinist here, too. I'm not even sure what the point of international basketball is anymore. Oh, man, this country that I happen to live in, I won't claim credit like it's me, but they're just killing these other countries. maybe it's a second place thing. I don't know, but I won't begrudge Andrew's opportunity to play for his country. I know that does matter to people, and it just probably means if he's in pain over the summer that they need to be even more cautious with how they use him. And fortunately for the Warriors, they do have the insurance policy of two guys behind him who can definitely play center in Spates and Azili, and maybe a third after these finals who in a pinch can play center in Draymond Green with the small ball five. So they do have options. I think that's the thing to focus on. The Warriors, it used to be said about them that, hey, you know, they'll be doomed if Bogut gets injured. If Bogut gets injured, that's going to ruin everything. That's going to upend the whole operation. I think they progressed to a point where that's not true anymore,
right?
Where it's nice to have Bogut. You'd want to have Bogut. But, hey, Bogut went down with an injury last season. He was out for a month. They had the best-ranked defense during that month still. It wasn't as good as it was when Bogut was in. You know, they were even better than that. But they've proven they can maintain defensive integrity when he's not there, and that is the principal reason he's there. So I think the positive to focus on is that much as they'd hate to have to do it, they could survive some Bogut absences.
He basically disappeared during the Cleveland series, probably because of injuries that weren't reported, and we were fine. They still got the championship, so of course you're right. Over, under, years left in Bogut's career, 2. Do you take the over or the under?
He said some things about not wanting to play extensively to the point where he really hurts when it rains. But at the same time, he likes his money. He likes money, too. It's difficult. Money versus pain. The old question. I feel like I'm talking about an NFL career here. 34. That's my guess, arbitrarily.
Okay. I'll take it. Would you rest him? Last question on Bogut. Do it Popovich style and not let him play all the games, or just let him roll out and see what
definitely.
Happens? Yeah,
definitely. I think you're going to see that in general. I think you're not going to see the Warriors win 67 games again, but you might see them become a better team just in terms of what they're capable of when they actually need to play everybody and give that intensity. So I don't think they're going to be going full bore. I don't think they're going to be trying to prove to themselves that they can win X amount of games. So you should see a lot of resting of the Bogut.
I guess I'm with that. Why the hell press it? All right, overarching questions. What's the biggest reason the Warriors have a shot at repeating as champions in the NBA next year?
That they're really good. I think that's the reason.
Best team in the league?
They had one of the best point differentials in the modern three-point line history, and they're returning everybody. The whole core that you mentioned at the beginning is either entering or smack dab in the middle of its prime with Draymond, with Steph, and with Klay Thompson. And so I think there's a little bit of overthinking it happening with looking at the other teams and maybe, the Spurs are impressive. I understand why people might be picking these other teams, but I'll lazily say that they should be the favorites again. I don't really believe in Cleveland. And hey, you said before that it was unbelievable to see the Golden State Warriors win a championship. Maybe I have that bias against Cleveland and the idea of any Cleveland championship, but I just, as a strategy of picking, I don't like the idea, and it seems almost like you're just trying to weasel out of making a pick, this idea of I'll pick the Eastern Conference team because they have an easier path. It sounds good in theory, but they've won 5 of the last 17 post-Jordan championships.
Right, and they don't have anywhere near the same talent.
You kind of have to win it once you're there. Yeah. You kind of have to beat the other team in the finals. It's nice that you have that path. But when it comes to the Cavs, they certainly have potential to do it. You're also relying on the health of Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, and Iman Shumpert.
Sure.
And that's a no thank you for me. So I would pick a team out of the West and probably pick the Warriors. Probably hold out on that till I absolutely have to make the pick, wait for a preseason and whatnot. But that would be my inclination just because, hey, it's not the most profound statement in the world. They were really, 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 really good last season.
Now, the other side. Give me the nasty underbelly. What's the biggest reason they won't repeat next year?
Got to be health. They didn't really get hit by that hard. Now, there's sort of a perception out there that they were the healthiest team of teams in the history of teams to ever health. And I think that's informed by two prominent teams having issues at certain times, and that would be the Thunder with the Kevin Durant injury, the Cavs with their timely finals injury, even though they were breaking down all season, again, with players who tend to get hurt. There's this odd thing of just thinking every team is entitled to an equal amount of health that I'll never understand.
Yeah, sure.
But anyway, so I think because of that, it fueled the sense that the Warriors were insanely healthy. They weren't insanely healthy, but give or take, they were roughly the fourth healthiest team in the league last year, and they would take that again, right? They would definitely take that.
Yeah,
and they've taken some steps to try to continue that, bringing in the Australian sports scientist into the fold now, into their operation. But hey, if they suffer some bad health luck, as we've seen with other teams, then that certainly shifts the outcome, and I think that's their main concern. I can't find many flaws beyond that. Maybe they need some more shooters. That's about the best I can do other than health.
What about lack of focus? Because everywhere I look this offseason, these guys are out there gallivanting around with the trophy. I mean, Klay Thompson's taking it to Washington State. Then I see, Andre's taking it somewhere else. Festus is going to Africa. Curry's in Asia. I mean, are these guys practicing?
I think he just went up your use of the term gravitas, by the way, Ethan. I'm just going to go ahead. I mean, gallivanting, I think, edges you out. I'm just going to say it. I'm sure other people have different opinions, but I want to put that on record.
I don't worry about the other guys and their gallivanting necessarily. With Curry, I do wonder, just as a human being, if this gets hard. You're the face of the Under Armour brand. You're traveling all around Asia trying to hawk this shoe. You're going on The Late Show now, and after going on Jimmy Kimmel, I do wonder if it takes its toll. But he doesn't party. He doesn't really party. So he's got more time to do some of those things maybe than other NBA players do. So I don't really worry about lack of focus, and maybe I'm wrong to not worry about that. But considering how many repeat championships the NBA has seen, if that lack of focus were such an impediment, then we wouldn't see that so often. But we do see it often, with the exception of the San Antonio Spurs, who somehow win a bunch of championships without ever repeating.
Last question, maybe the most important, and then we'll let you go gallivant in any direction that you want. Does Space Jam, in fact, have the strangest plot line in the history of movies?
I'm sure there are worse plot lines out there. I just wouldn't care to watch those movies. The Space Jam one is weird, principally because it's made for kids, and in theory, something made for kids should be simple. That's what's weird about it. The other plot lines are complicated because they're trying to confuse adults. The Space Jam one seems like some sort of acid-soaked nightmare, and that I don't think is proper for kids. And when you really see it back-to-back with another kids movie, if you're watching, say, Little Giants after Space Jam or The Sandlot, it's just jarring in that sense, that this is a very poorly made kids movie.
I don't know what you mean. I mean, I feel like I come across space wormholes into cartoon worlds every time I go to a golf course. I mean, it seems like a really easy jump to make. I also, the thing that always bothered me about that movie is I never understood why the aliens went after Sean Bradley and his talents. I mean, they just needed someone tall. Do they not have tall aliens? That whole thing just bothered me. It has for years.
The aliens had a terrible general manager, obviously. They had the Isaiah Thomas of alien general managers on Moron Mountain. I mean, the getting pulled through the golf hole almost makes more sense to me than just everything else, the convoluted aspect of these Moron Mountain people, and they're bad, so we call them morons, I guess, or they call themselves morons, coming to the Earth to enslave Looney Tune characters and put them in a zoo on their alien planet, and to do that, beating them in a basketball game that requires them sucking the souls out of actual real-life NBA players so they can go through the underground to then play the Looney Tunes in order to win. It's a really insane plot line. I can't even imagine what went into coming up with that.
I just wish we could have been in the room when they pitched it, and right when they thought that, you know, they couldn't have been better, the person goes, and we're involving Bill Murray. Boom! Just go ahead and suck on that. Greatest plot ever.
I would love to know when he got involved in the process. It was just from an era where you could have Michael Jordan doing anything and people would go crazy for it. He was a god at that time, and that was the ultimate test, because that's a movie people still kind of fondly remember.
Yeah, they do.
Even though it is horrible.
Yeah, no, there's an age group who holds it in the same kind of reverence as like Goonies or something like that, where, you know, it just should not be.
Dude, there's a scene in there, and I know everything, according to our sensibilities now, made before 1999 is problematic, but there's a scene of Michael Jordan, his shadow in shackles, because he has wagered his freedom on the line. He has said to the Moron Mountain people that you can enslave me if we lose this basketball game, and they show a cartoon of Michael Jordan in shackles as a slave. And because we didn't really have the internet back then, we didn't go crazy about that as racially absolute insanity, especially for a kids movie. That was in there. Nobody talks about it. It really, I think a lot of what happens with Space Jam is what happens with Adam Sandler movies, a lot of products that people, they see it as a kid, they don't have the right faculties for judging it, and they never return to it. Now, if they return to it and stone cold sober, and maybe not stone cold sober, maybe you need a little something to really see what's going on with Space Jam. If they sat down and watched it, they would have to concede that this is just a dreadful, dreadful piece of something, you know, pretending to be art. Not even pretending to be art. Pretending to be, you know, something, a vehicle to sell McDonald's. But still, it sucks. That's the main thing I'm saying. It sucks.
I feel like we just killed the Santa Claus. Ethan, where can we find you, generally speaking, man? For people who want to hear more of your opinions, podcasts, the whole nine yards, where do we look?
I'm on ESPN.com. I'm at Sherwood Strauss on Twitter. I do the True Hoop TV podcast, and also we do videocasts. And, you know, just follow me on Twitter. Hopefully I'll promote myself well enough one of these days.
Sounds good. Thank you, man. Phenomenal time. We really appreciate it. One last thing before we get out of here. We talked last week about the Huddle t-shirts that are still available. Man, we still got a couple of those or what?
Well, it was far from last week as I took a little jaunt away from
episode,
you.
Whatever.
Yeah, we do. We still got some Huddle t-shirts, and they are a collector's item.
Yeah, no doubt. There's like 10 that exist in all of the world. So we are looking to give one of these away right now. Here's the contest. Here's how we're going to handle it. If you are interested in getting one of these shirts, it is a two-step process. One, hop on iTunes and drop an amazing review for us. You don't even have to mean it. We don't care if it's honest. Just put something on there that says that you actually like the pod. Two, once you've done that, send us an email to warriorshuddle@gmail.com. Let us know what your Apple ID is so that we can identify the actual review and answer the following question. In our opening, somebody says, we're going to bring you all into our huddle. Tell us who that player is, and we will select a few winners, put them into a hat, and then just pull out a random name. How are we picking the ultimate winner?
Yeah, we're going to, we won't select a few winners. We're just going to select one winner based upon the reviews. We'll put them in a hat. We'll choose a winner at random.
Yeah, and we're hoping to have more of these shirts as time goes on, so maybe we'll have some more to give away. One last offer there. If I see you at any Warrior game wearing this shirt, I hereby humbly promise to buy you at least one drink. Real deal. So this comes with, you know, random drinks in the future if we can ultimately work it out. Huge fun, you guys. Thank you so much for listening this week. We really appreciate it and enjoy it. Please remember, if you're looking for us, our Twitter account is @WarriorsHuddle. Our Gmail account, as we've already mentioned, is warriorshuddle@gmail.com. Our website remains warriorsworld.net. We've already shown you how much we appreciate reviews. Get on there, get yourself a shirt, and hopefully we'll see you guys next week. Go Warriors.
Good, good.